Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sangham namassami. Today that being a full moon night, offer some reflections on the practice, and what's it like to be in the Thai forest tradition? It could be the lion's roar on the Ajahn Chah tradition, and to me, that's the reason why I'm a monk. Is having had the great fortune just to fall into the tradition, and sometimes I describe my path as you're walking along, you fall into this hole. Like a rabbit hole. You see many weird and wonderful things that you hadn't expected before. And it's, like I said, some people may know already, I was not very spiritual nor interested. I wasn't suffering. As far as I can tell, obviously there's suffering when you're not enlightened, but not like terrible suffering. It wasn't, had a career, successful, decent health, relationship, wasn't short of dates on Saturdays or Fridays. And but for different chance, different reason, fell into Buddhism and the practice of the Dhamma, and just experienced like peace and stillness, and the wholesome qualities of contentment. That's something that I wasn't ever interested or wasn't encouraged. But when you experience truth, it has deep power to kind of made me very curious, certainly to explore the spiritual path. Which, while I was growing up as a Catholic, you do your social thing more. But meeting the Dhamma, meeting the truth for the first time, yeah, it does. It has this amazing power to hold you and to interest, and to garner interest. And I tell people, especially young monks, but it hasn't been an easy path. Certainly, the beginning of the years, the early years, was a lot of challenges, And with any system, any group, any tradition, there's lots of things that can be very annoying. And I was telling somebody earlier, the rules of our rules about food that we eat makes no sense whatsoever in any logical system. And but there's this sense that I'm willing to give it a try, see what happens. Other people do it, I should be able to do it as well. Celibacy, not a great believer of that initially as well. But, I sense, it must be, has a reason. And it's the same, it's kind of a bit of ego-driven in the beginning. Yeah, all these people can be celibate, can be so. But also, it's also the framework of thinking. I throw everything I have into this practice for a year and see what happens. So it's never, I'm going to give everything up for the rest of my life, which I think I wouldn't be able to do that. But certainly, I can give up eating after 12, the sex, the music, whatever, for a year and see what happens. The first year, with these challenges, there was also amazing kind of experiences of peace and clarity, something that I would never had experienced before, because the mind was just moving, one thing after another. Working very hard full time. In the stockbroking, which moves very quickly, talking to people, and then there's dinner plans, gym, clubs, weekends, more stuff, and then working again. It's full on, 60, 70 hours a week working, but was young, lots of energy, lots of caffeine, lots of nicotine, didn't matter. And but the stillness and Dhamma has this amazing effect that woke me up really. And so I have immense gratitude for the Ajahn Chah tradition that I came into. When I read his works, it just speaks very directly, very frank, something that I relate to. And I never felt the need to look around. Initially, read a couple of books on Zen's mind, beginner's mind. But I also was lucky to had Ajahn Chah Sarawas an abbot, who gave me very good advice when I first came. He says, there are many traditions many ways of approaching the Dhamma. And Buddhism has been around for 2,500 years. So, you know, it's went to different lands, many cultural aspects of it. And you know, and they're all kind of valid. They all have their good points, and they all have their, obviously, negative points. But what you should do, and he says, you know, recommend, it's up to you, recommend that the first 5 years that try not to read anything else other than the Thai Forest tradition. Because you read too much, then you start to compare, and it starts to create doubts, and it starts to get the mind moving, and that it's not very peaceful. Once you have a stable foundation in the practice, once you have a stable foundation in samadhi, and sila, samadhi, and panya, then you can start to explore the other tradition and you know, see what they have to offer. And all traditions do have very good points, very skillful means to offer to the practice. But the strange thing is, your practice deepens, the samadhi becomes more still, more solid. I didn't feel the need to look around too much. And it's the same, I'm not kind of a doubting character. And it's, you know, and many teachers tell me, you know, like spiritual path, it's like digging a hole. Just dig one hole and keep on going. A lot of problems with a lot of people is they don't dig deep enough. They dig 50 holes or they scratch away at the surface and they go scratch somewhere else, they scratch somewhere else. And they say, there's no water underneath. There is water. You're just going to dig, find one hole and keep digging and digging and digging. Sure, it's frustrating. Sure, you hit, you know, roots and you hit hard spots. And so sometimes, you know, it gets messy. But as long as you don't give and you dig, you get it. Yeah, so as far as my hole is, yeah, it feels very wet. I know where the water is. I haven't touched water, but it feels very, very wet. And there's no need to hop up and dig another hole. And I feel that like Ajahn Chah's teaching the horse is just enough. It's not perfect, but it's certainly enough to inspire, to uplift, to just feel so grateful each and every day that I'm here, able to practice. The longer I become a monk, sense of gratitude, sense of kind of wonderment, really, just increases by so many folds. That just appreciation, yeah, the great karma of falling into it. Because looking back, I've seen so many people with so many different paths and so many different exposure, and just going here, going there, and you know, with the internet, with so much information around, so many books to read, so many teachers to go to, Sydney, getting calls on a weekly basis, this great teacher's coming, that great teacher's coming, doing this retreat, doing that retreat, and it's endless. You can jump from one great teacher to the next and not really get anywhere in the practice. And you see that in Buddhism in the West, it's kind of a buffet of Buddhism, pick and choose as you go along, but not really getting full. And that's the thing, and then getting indigestion along the way because you're eating so many things, mixing everything up together. And it's not about, you know, and it's not about kind of how much you know. Like you tell people, it's not about how many books you've read. It's how deep you reflect on the Dhamma. It's always, you know, and impermanent, stress, suffering, and not self. But how deep those concepts go into. And the reason, and we all think we understand the Dhamma, we all think we know, but it's deepest in when we can't let go of the sufferings that we have in our life. We learn to live in harmony with each other. We're not holding on to issues. We're open. There's a spaciousness of mind to be able to accept new things. And so much of the training is this ability. And that's why, you know, kind of humility, respect, it's not something that is kind of warm and fuzzy to have or we'd like to think to have. It's because having humility, being respectful, those are the states of mind that softens the mind, opens the mind up, allows the mind to take in new information, to evaluate things. Ajahn Chah said, you know, a lot of people come to the monastery and they're like a teacup that's full. It's full of tea, full of knowledge, full of views. You can't have, it doesn't take anything in. You can't contain anymore because it's so full of it already. And then sometimes, yeah, it is, obviously, you know, we all have our kind of different kind of takes, different ways to approach the Dhamma. But seeing over the years, yeah, it's this openness, this kind of ability to see, I don't know, I'll try this and see what happens. That people do kind of start to progress on the path. It's this kind of thing. And we all are stubborn. That's why we're here. We're stubborn, you know, we're rebelling against the world. We're not stubborn. We're normal, quote unquote. And we're just having jobs, getting families, and doing stuff. But sometimes use the stubbornness to look into this, to look into our own attachment. Use the stubbornness to investigate, you know, what is it that I always want to get my way? What is it in there that I think I know? And do I really know? If I know, then why am I suffering? You know, what is it? And I don't know, I found that the tradition of setting up, you know, living communal living, rubbing against each other day in, day out, looking at each other and working with each other, provide a great source of ability to work through the internal stuff. We all meet people that we don't always get along. We, especially in the kitchen, many people have different views on how to run things, how to put things together. But it's the ability just to work together in harmony, giving up sometimes what we think we really know, how to cook at certain things, how to look after things, but to allow, you know, things to unfold, to work together in a harmonious way, in a way that generates a wholesome state of mind. And a lot of times it's a lot of giving up what we think ourselves is, giving up what we really know. And it's the giving up. That's the essence of the practice. It's not gaining more things. Sometimes over here we gain. I want to be enlightened. I want to get my jhanas. I want to get this. It's not about that. It's about the giving up. The more you give up, these things happen. But it's not about getting more stuff. And sometimes people do approach that, you know, with like a material, you know, spiritual materialism. In the certain traditions, they give you certificate. Do the second jhana, go to the third jhana, fourth jhana, and then you're a stream entry after 10 days retreat. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It's like, it doesn't work that way, guys. It's not how it works. It's this kind of ability to open, this contentment in the present moment. And you know, enlightenment is there, but it's not something that you can reach for, not something you can plan, nothing you can project towards, nothing you can think about. You roughly know where it is. Yes, increasing peace, increasing stillness, increasing sense of gratitude and contentment in the present moment. And these things, and then the mind opens and things happen. And yeah. You know, because there is so much knowledge that the Buddhism tends to be, you know, kind of armchair Buddhism. That there's so much views and opinions and how to get it. But the Ajahn Chah tradition is bringing that to life, you know. It's, you know, yeah, it's good to think the Buddha is a great teacher, and he is a great teacher. Why am I? But he had, you know, but the living tradition of the Ajahn Chah, Lumpur Lim, Lumpur Sumedho, Ajahn Chah Saro, they are the embodiment of the Buddha in my experience. They carry something of the Buddha over the years. Sure, they're not perfect, but they're the transmission. They're the one that says, you know, yeah, you know, practice contentment. We eat at this time, we finish at this time. These are the items you have your breakfast. Buddha's not around to say, well, you know, don't do that. Cut this out. Wake up earlier. You know, when it's not your turn to cook, don't go in my kitchen and make your own stuff. That's not how it works. It's our idea to have this idea of the Buddha. But our Buddha, most people I meet who says, I take the Buddha as my teacher, that Buddha is very similar to that person's personality for some reason. Maybe it's by coincidence. Maybe not. And that's the thing of, you know, the at least have the trust and humility to say, well, you know, I don't have the idea. So maybe I would just give up to myself, to a training that's bigger than myself. Give it to a community. Give it to a communal harmony. And be able to take on new things. And there is great sense of joy and happiness as you learn to give up, as you learn to evolve, as you learn to move beyond your kind of comfort zone. Because sure, you know, the sense of self, and we want security, we want, you know, to do our way the way we want it. We all have that tendency. And we think it protects us. You know, it's like sometimes people build walls to protect themselves. I think it does. But the problem is, after a while, those walls turn to be your prison. And you can't move beyond that sense of self because it's so limiting. And we create that prison by ourselves because we think we know and I'm safe because I do this and that. But it's the learning to allow the wall to fade away. Really, allow it to take down the wall. And try to move beyond the wall. Yes, there's lots of discomfort, a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety around it. And that's what Ajahn Chah said, you know, the core wall, the way we run the monastery, it's meant to bring up discomfort. It's meant to bring up irritation. You're irritated, annoyed, depressed. That's good. It means that there is an attachment somewhere. And it's to work with it, to learn from it, not to shy away from it. Because people in the world, you know, do exactly what they want to do. But does that bring any lasting happiness? I mean, okay, most of you guys are pretty young. But, you know, people coming in, you know, they do their life, follow your whole life. Do whatever you want, see whoever you want to see, be what you want to be, take what you want to take, whatever. And does that bring lasting happiness? It hasn't. Then there's another way. There's something beyond the self. Beyond what you think is good for you. And it is this openness, humility, respect that paves the way, that creates the conditions for the letting go, for the acceptance, for the moving beyond our limited worldviews of what we want and not want. But it's also, you know, it's always the day-to-day kind of working with different things that arises, whether it's greed, wanting to, you know, certain things to be on the table, wanting certain things to be your way, or just working other people, receiving criticism, or whatever. It's that day-to-day that we learn to see where our attachments are, learn to see our own sense of self coming up. That, oh, okay, we think we are equanimous, but when someone says something nice about us, oh, I feel very good today. Oh, so we are a little bit attached to praise. That's okay. The main thing is just be able to watch, to see, to investigate the different things that come up. But it does take faith. It takes an openness to receive things. And sometimes it's not easy. Yeah, because we all, at heart, you know, want things a certain way. We want things when we want it. Just this much, not a bit more, not a bit less. But, you know, the training is the encouragement to push the boundaries a little bit. So we sometimes have late night sits, do different things, meditate longer or whatever, encourage people to fast or eat in a certain way. Just kind of pushing what we think are physical and mental boundaries that we are trapped by. But it does take a commitment. It takes trust. A lot of people come into this, you know, tradition not knowing. Yeah, they find it can be very annoying. There's no rules for every single thing. But like I said, a lot of these rules are not set up by Ajahn Chah. A lot of rules are set by the Buddha. He's got hundreds and hundreds of rules about everything. But it's meant to, brings a sense of harmony. It's meant to bring the mind to focus. It's meant to simplify. It sounds ironic, meant to simplify the monk's life with so many rules. And because you can't do very many things. So it does mean, okay, you're just sitting mostly in the monastery, focusing on meditation practice, working together, cultivating wholesome states of mind, cultivating letting go, giving up, peace and harmony, gentleness, patience, endurance, just to be with different things. And just to see, you know, the things that impresses me was that, to see the change of people, you know, over the years, you know, when you ordained with monks, you know, as novices together. Sure, along the way, a lot of people fall off the radar screen for different reasons, and that's just part of life. But seeing people, you know, affected by the Dhamma, and that's a wonderful thing to witness. You know, see the confusion, the irritation, anxiety starts to fade away. And you see the wholesome states of mind starts to blossom. Or just, you know, the ability to be just the spaciousness, just to be with unpleasant things. Yeah, and it is like what kind of was, you know, a beautiful, wonderful path. And I keep reminding people, it's beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, beautiful in the end. It's not, you know, in the beginning, of course, being young monk, being very worldly, there's always kind of a goal. Yeah, I want to be in stream entry with, you know, 3 years. After that, maybe 7 years max. It only took the Buddha 5 years to be enlightened. Maybe 7 years. You know, I've got all the teachings and everything ready. I can do that. 7 years, I can give up. Now I can do my write my books and go back. You know, to do whatever I was doing before, and be a great person, whatever. Blah blah blah. And it's just looking back. Yeah, it's just silliness of being young monk, and that's fine. And I see that same tendency, dynamics, replay itself over and over again over the years. But over the years, you realize that, yeah, it's just a great blessing just to be in the robes, to be in the monastery, to be practicing, to feel a sense of gratitude, to be happy, just be in the present moment. Be happy, just be with the way things are. You know, stay in a quiet place, staying with good people, be able to practice meditation, cultivate wholesome state of mind in different ways, offer a bit of a teaching of the Buddha when it's required. And yeah, and if nothing ever happened in my monk's life, just be able to meet, you know, Rumpo Lim, Ajahn Thun, just be able to bow their feet. You know, it's 20 years, it's more than worthwhile. Really. To see the confusions in the world, to see what people chase after, to see what people really, you know, waste their time doing. And to have this, you know, great karma, to be in contact with the beauty of the Buddhist teaching, the beauty of the Ajahn Chah tradition, the Thai Forest tradition. Yeah, it's an immense karmic, yeah. It must be an immense, great amount of karma somewhere in the past that I haven't made. And I keep telling people, yeah, it's like hitting the jackpot of the good karma, to be able to appreciate, you have the pure teaching, and something that you worked. You see it, you know, in your own mind, you see in your own heart, you see in the people around you, and you see it when you go to Thailand, you meet these great meditation masters. You see how much peace and clarity, how much compassion they just radiate from their being. Yeah. You know, and that's the reason that was kept me in the ropes for 20 years. It's not because I made a promise to somebody. Like I said, you know, my family more than happy if I were to end this phase of mine and be a normal person again. Every time I go back home, why are you going to be normal again? The good old times. This is normal. No, it's not. We can go out again. Go to clubs. And I keep telling them, if you guys do anything interesting, I would be tempted. You haven't done anything interesting in the last 20 years either. Yeah, there's career, there's this and that, there's holidays and bits and pieces and divorces and marriages again and kids and stuff. But it's all the same thing. It's not very interesting. Whereas you stay in one place, do the same thing day in, day out. No glamorous holidays here. No ecstasy pills to take or drugs to enhance your experience. But the ecstasy of stillness, the ecstasy of a harmless living, ecstasy of clarity of mind, the world opens up. The whole forest opens up when the mind is still. It is as if you're in a fantasy movie where everything is beautiful, bright, clear, everything's perfect. And it's a wonderful experience. You just look at the tree and you just kind of are in awe of this kind of beauty of nature. It can be so beautiful at times. Amazing shades of color and then depth. And that's, you know, that's what is on offer in monastery. Clarity, stillness, the peace of blamelessness, the peace of stillness, the happiness that gradually increases naturally. But it's something that is a personal thing. Obviously, you know, we are do a lot in communal. It's a communal activity, the Sangha, communal monks and nuns and practitioners. And there's that aspect. But a lot of it is an individual path as well. You know, different people come into this community and leave at different times. We understand that, yeah, you know, have many good friends who become monks and then change their mind. We'll keep in touch over the years. So there's also a very individual path, and people do, you know, it's a karmic thing. We get as much out of it as they like, and when they're ready. When things change, they can move on, and that's fine. It's not like, you know, everything you, whatever good qualities you cultivate, wholesome qualities, good karma you cultivate in the monastery, It's something that you always can keep, something you can rely on. You know what peace is, you know how to cultivate that. That stays with you for a long, long time. I say, if you leave the monastery tomorrow and never come back, it's still good. It's still those the qualities that you can take with you anywhere and apply it. The discipline, the focus, the clarity of mind. Yeah, but once, like I said, once you taste peace and clarity, why would you settle for anything else? I can't offer you enough money or fame or power, really. And Dhani was saying, yeah, you know, when he was experiencing, you know, stillness, experience, you know, peace of mind, so, you know, can offer the whole world, can turn into a big diamond or gold and offer him everything. Not interested. That's what the Buddha also pointed to. You know, is that something, it's a rare commodity. You can be powerful and rich, but there's no peace, there's no stillness. You have nothing, really. And all this is offered, an offer, just through a bit of faith, humility, respect, a bit of openness. You can't move beyond yourself. You move into the world of clarity, stillness, world of peace, world of brightness. But it is a training. It is, which is very similar to any type of training, that you have to be focused, you have to work at it, you have to persevere. You have to do it day in, day out, whether you like it or not. Ajahn Chah's famous phrase, you like meditating, meditate a lot. You hate meditating, meditate a lot. Just this persistence of just not going with your likes and dislikes, just keep on moving. Keep on always, you know, focus. Every day is a new opportunity to cultivate a wholesome state of mind. Yeah, yesterday may be a terrible day, you might have messed up and break all the precepts, but today is a new day. Begin anew. And keep moving forward. Cultivate. If you don't give up, that's where you use your stubbornness. I'm not giving up. I'm not moving from this path. That's where stubbornness becomes useful. Don't care what anybody else says. I'm not moving away from this. Then you'll get to the end. Guarantee. So you don't stop, so you don't walk, you know, take a right turn, left turn somewhere, keep walking, keep moving. There's the end, there's a path and there's fruit. There's beauty, there's love, there's respect. So any qualities that you long for and want in life. So I offer that for your reflection. Full moon night, guarding the benefit of the tradition of the Ajahn Chah, the forest tradition, but about letting go, humility, respect, into beauty, inspiration, to peace and clarity. Okay, so now we continue to sit and walk to 11 o'clock, and then we'll come back together to chant the Iti Piso to midnight.